Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 476, Origins, Game Fair Preview. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey everyone, we are back, and as always, we're talking about new stuff. Now let's be fair, new board games, awesome. Old board games, just as awesome. Unfortunately, they don't have conventions for old board games. I mean, they're there, but they should do that. Maybe we should do that, Anthony. Why shouldn't we do that?
I mean, you get little ones, right?
You
There's
do.
SplatterCon coming up in Pittsburgh in a couple
Ooh,
months.
They're nice,
like
nice.
The Stefan Feld thing that they run out in Brooklyn.
Yeah, you went to that way back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. They exist in little pockets, but they don't have 20,000 people.
Ah. We need to do a big one where they have 20,000 people because
yeah,
classic. I mean, it's weird to say classic. What's classic? Is it? I mean, the way the industry
18
moves
months
days?
Ago. Yeah,
I remember like not so long ago we were talking endlessly because the reports was like, if a game has spent 6 months on the shelf, it's done.
Right,
and we're just like, oh dear God, I'm like, that is awful. I have games from like 10, 20 years ago I have yet to play, so...
Right.
Are those classic legendary games now at this point? I don't know. Whew, that's a thing. So, but we'll be talking about the Origins Game Fair preview. This is the first big board game convention that's coming out. It's this summer. We've been to it. They started it when they found out Anthony's birthday was at that time.
Yep.
Because
yep.
They wanted to celebrate Anthony and also tabletop gaming.
Right, yeah, now I don't go anymore. So they're like, what are we even doing? What's the point of this?
You got too cool for it, man. You were like, I know it, I get it. It's about me being here with the board games. But, bro, above it now.
I know. Well, sorry, guys. I'm going to be across the country that day. Those days.
But it is happening. And it is, as they say, the five best days in gaming, give or take.
Yeah, well. Subjective.
Well, it's a thing that's happening and there's games that are coming out, so we're going to talk about Board Game Geek's hotness preview. So we're going to talk about the hot games there where everyone gives the thumbs up so that hopefully you get a sense of what's coming up and in fact what games are probably being reinvented, re-implemented, revised, or just a straight up second printing. So that'll be our feature review. But before we get into all that fun stuff, Anthony, BGG did something else. They actually gave awards for their Golden Geeks, man.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, hopefully you know about this because we've talked about it now like three times in the last month and a half.
I know.
The Board Game Geek Awards. It's the quickest awards around. We're still waiting on the nominations from all the other ones. But we got nominations and voting and now the awards for the Golden Geeks all in like a,
bum, bum, bum.
A four-week period. So we're not going to make a whole feature out of it. We're just going to kind of skim through them real quick. I think most of these are things we thought would win. So
yes,
I see very few surprises in here.
No, I think it certainly legitimizes a lot of things we've said and a lot of things that we voted for also are awards for the year end.
Yeah, that's true.
Are really on this list too.
Yep. All right. Two-player game with Sky Team.
Not surprised.
Not surprised at all. Artwork presentation, Castles of Burgundy Special Edition.
Not surprised, but seems kind of unfair, but sure.
I mean, you took a very ugly game and made it very pretty, so I guess it's okay. I'm okay with that.
Sure, yeah.
Cooperative game, also Sky Team.
Sure, sure. Not surprised.
Expansion went to Ark Nova Marine Worlds. I'm not surprised at all because of the number of people who bought it, but it is, to me, honestly, a little bit of a meh.
Expansion. Everyone loves their Ark Nova, man. Like, you just got to give them more Ark Nova. And people do like marine creatures.
That is true. That is true. You put dolphins in my game, I'll be all about it.
Definitely.
All right. Innovation went to Hegemony.
Yeah, not a surprise. That was our game of the year. So, and again, this is a hard category because innovative? I mean, every tabletop game is innovative. But yeah, Hegemony.
This one is particularly innovative. So I'm okay with it. Yeah.
Same here.
Late game of the year was Thunder Road Vendetta, which I'm pretty sure this is what we said 2 weeks ago that this would win because it's winning everything else.
It's got great table presence.
Yeah. Medium game of the year, we definitely said it'd be Earth because everything is Earth and it's not our game, but it's what wins with everybody else.
Yes.
And heavy game of the year, Hegemony, which was our game of the year for last year as well.
Yep. Because that's how we roll, man.
Yeah, we go heavy.
Yeah, if you haven't played Hegemony, Lead Your Class to Victory, check it out. It's not as heavy as you may think. It's definitely manageable and reasonable. It's just a matter of getting four people.
It's super easy, guys.
Says the guy who plays 18 double X games.
I know, I'm just kidding. Party game, that's not a hat.
Sure.
All right. Print and play is Waypoints. We pretty well cover that we don't know these games, but Waypoints, yes. I'll actually check it out. Solo game is Legacy of You. Shem Phillips. Thematic game, Hegemony, Lead Your Class to Victory. Again, the three-peat, three awards.
Yeah, buddy. Big triple stuff. Crown.
War game went to Undaunted Battle of Britain. Not surprised at all, because this is like the war game all the board gamers would have played.
It's same. That's what I played.
Yeah. Like, because we didn't know what half these games were. So,
but we, I feel bad. We Undaunted.
I'm sure there's a lot of war gamers out there being like, come on, guys. Best podcast, One-Stop Co-op Shop. Longtime friend of the show, Jason Perez, is over on that podcast. So congrats to them. And then best board game app went to the $4,000 Unmatched Digital Edition.
People like the Unmatched stuff, man.
Yeah, no, they love that stuff. But we talked about that before, like best-selling games of last year. There was like 20 versions of Unmatched.
Yeah.
It's on that list.
If you could swing it. Swing it and then invite me because I can't swing it.
No, that's a lot of money for a Steam game. So.
It's unmatched in comparison to the other games.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. It was a weird year for apps too, and I'm not downplaying Unmatched. Like, good for them. They should also get their money. But it was a weird year. It just Yeah. I think in a Dune Imperium would be a player, but obviously release schedule and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, again, other things that are kind of popping a little bit was we talked about last week, Splatterspellin, one of the best and heaviest tabletop gaming company out there. And after we had that conversation, they took note and they are now have announced that they're releasing Indonesia, third edition. Good job, because Indonesia has not gotten to the table in quite some time, and it definitely needed a reprint, because it's a fantastic game. And this one actually has changes in comparison to the second edition. So you're going to get a new board, which is good, because the board is a challenge. I think
the board is the worst part of that. game by a long shot. You couldn't even tell the difference between some of the regions. They're like, this one's green. You're like, but that's also green. Well, that's a different shade of green.
And then the other problem with the game, or the other challenge with, I should say, with the game, was there is seemingly an endless number of little cardboard chips representing the different goods, and they're everywhere and they're hard to manage, and dear God, if you bang that table, just go home. Don't even leave the game behind. Like, you don't want to look at that again. So they're going to get, as they say, very thick cardboard tokens so that they can use full color print for them, which excellent. They're redesigning the goods to be easier to recognize. Thank God, because they are also very hard to recognize on a board of endless numbers of things. and the ships have been completely redesigned. They're made of wood, which is great because it goes back to the first edition. Some of the good stuff that they had there. The company cards have been redesigned, so they're much easier to read and use. The cities will still be glass stones, but they will also now have a cardboard indicator that you can place so that you can use them to place goods, so they're easier to identify. Little wooden tokens, new player aids, which you can never have enough player aids. And they've changed TV dinners, which is really the thing that's upsetting me, because there's no longer going to be a TV dinner resource in the game. So
yeah, but now it's called what it should be called, the Siapsaji, which I thought that's what it was called because that's what we called it in my game group. So
I didn't know. I agree, but the idea that I am managing TV dinners was always so hilarious, right? Like you have this like realistic, crunchy game, and then there's TV dinners like on the board. So I was like, oh, that's fun. That's a thing. But right. Yeah, I'm fine. You know, I don't know. It's just a little bit of levity in a very heavy game. So, because, you know, TV dinners, that's kind of comical. Why isn't there more board games about TV dinners, man? Like, that was the game. That was the game. That was like the final Jeopardy question about, like, this game has TV dinners in it. It's like, what is Indonesia? Again, nobody would ever guess that. I would win millions of dollars based on that. I would know
that's
that
true.
Answer.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And just on other news and stuff like that, we mentioned previously that the former Wizards of the Coast president has joined Funko as a CEO immediately after she left Wizards of the Coast. So she had a job set up. So do not worry, fellow friends. Wizards of the Coast, how that happened, what was that deal? Well, now that's coming to Funko. So yay?
I guess that's technically a higher position. Like Wizards of the Coast makes a ton of money. It's like Hasbro's profit center, but it's still like part of a larger company. Funko is the whole company.
Yes.
So that would be like the equivalent of moving up to the head of Hasbro, which she would not have done because they already have one and he's only been there for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Funko, it's funny though, because you're going from Wizards of the Coast, which was killing it, making all the monies, maybe some bad decisions, but all the monies, to Funko, a company that's been losing all the monies. So
yeah, they made some bad decisions too.
They printed a lot of Funko Pops during the pandemic and nobody wanted them. So.
And they dumped them somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. And aren't they spinning off like their game division too? Like,
they did. They already did that. Yep, they did that. That was a shame because Prosperous Hall did a fantastic job for that particular weight of family games. And it was good production. So actually, maybe it does better now. Maybe on its own, it does a better thing.
One can hope.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I have Funkos. You have Funkos.
they're cool. I dig it. I'm from Seattle, so I collect all of these. I have to get them shipped across the country, but every year there's twice a year at the ballpark in Seattle, they do like a Funko of a player.
Oh, so nice.
I have like the full collection of all those. And some of them are very rare, which I didn't realize until I was on eBay the other day finding the new one. I was like, oh, this one's worth many monies. Okay. I should take care of it.
That's funny.
But yeah, Funko's right out there in Everett, which is, I used to live there.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Hopefully it straightens up and pulls back because I always thought it was a really great idea that would allow most people in the public, including myself, who again doesn't have all the monies, to purchase a representation of a thing that I like. But it quickly became something that I can no longer afford because they're like $50, $75, $300 because of the rareness and the chase and everything else.
Yeah. So, and they do take up a lot of space.
They do.
Like you get an action figure, it's like 6 inches, it's whatever. A Funko Pop, it's like 4x3, 4x5, 5 inches. It takes a lot of space.
It was the thing. So, all right. Well, I guess beyond that, Anthony, we watched X-Men 97. I think most people did.
I mean, all of us nerds who like X-Men, yeah.
Yeah. If you were in your 30s or 40s, like, this is the show. And even if you weren't a big X-Men fan, I think you probably are familiar with this. This was one of the high points for Marvel animation back in the day.
Yeah.
It was done in a very mature manner. Like there was actual like personal drama and character growth and great storylines taken from the comics, obviously condensed, sometimes painfully, but respectfully nonetheless. So when X-Men 97 came out recently in their new form for their second season, it's been great. It's wrapped up really nicely. It was good production, good characters, good development. Seems like it's going to tie into other things. I think it's canonical, right? We're keeping canon with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it depends on how you define that. Like it's canonical to X-Men, the animated series. And they say it's somehow weaves into the Marvel.
It's going to be another universe, right? It's just,
yeah, it's there's no way. Well, I mean, you can tell just by like the cameos that they have of the Marvel heroes. Like those aren't the ones we know, but
sure.
But it'll connect somehow or not. And we could just pretend it does.
And there's also going to be a new Lords of the Ring movie.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings. What is it? Hunt for Gollum?
Yeah.
They're calling it. So
why?
This? Yeah, I don't know. And there's a lot of funny stuff around this. So one, there's already a fan film of this. Have you seen this?
I have YouTube? Not. No.
So there's a fan film that's been up for like 10 years on YouTube and has like 40 or 50 million views.
Oh, go watch it.
And when they announced this, that fan film got removed almost immediately.
Oh, wow.
I think it's back now. It was last time I checked. Probably it was like an automated thing. Like they filed a trademark. It got removed immediately. But it was like, that's a good way to start it off. Hey, we got a new thing. Nobody knows if it's going to be good. Let's nuke this other thing that everybody loves.
you know, the thing we probably stole the idea directly from.
Right. Yeah. So this is going to be the hunt for Gollum, which is Aragorn looking for Gollum to learn about the ring. So some amount of time before the events of The Hobbit, even. But we don't. It's been written about. It's in Tolkien's notes and some of the stories, but it's not obviously directly within those novels. So what they're working from here is a combination of various things that Tolkien and his son wrote over the years. I'm not super big on this lore, and I'm sure if you're listening to this and you're like, you're missing this and this. And I'm like, I apologize. But it is based, it's not completely made up out of whole cloth. It is a thing that happened. It's going to have characters that we know. I have to imagine they're going to cast somebody new for Aragorn. Because Viggo Mortensen at this point has got to be in his late 50s, early 60s.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So.
He is amazing, though. He could pull it off.
Yeah, I know. It's hard, though. Like, yeah, that guy lives for like 300 years. I'm like, yeah, but this is a prequel. So.
They could weirdly de-age him, which would be bad.
I hate that in everything. Just
I know.
Recast. We have like 9 James Bonds and nobody cares, but no, we have to have the same Luke Skywalker and everything. Creepy plastic face.
That's true.
But I don't know. It's Andy Serkis is directing and will be in it, maybe. That part wasn't clear. I'll hold my breath because the last 4 Lord of the Rings things weren't very good.
Rings of Power,
not very good. And then the animated movie that's coming out this winter, we don't really know anything about. So.
Sure. Good luck. Good luck to us all.
I love me some Lord of the Rings. I will go see it. I will tell myself I like it. And then in a year later, I will tell you if I actually like it or not. Because that's what happened with every single Hobbit movie. I'm like, that was great. And later I'm like, I don't actually want to rewatch that. I guess I don't like it.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that's what's happening out there in the world. Anthony, what's happening with us?
Right. So check out the Patreon. This last week I posted the audio for the Tabletop Teach session that we had at Long Island Tabletop back in April. So you can listen to the full hour-long presentation that myself, Chris, and Will presented. So it's basically a podcast episode, but specifically focusing on just this one topic. So we talk about teaching games, what that means, what that looks like, how we do it in our professional context, the things we take into consideration. We give lots of examples. We use Seven Wonders a lot. So check that out. And then this week we're going to be posting the Level Up Your Mental Health presentation, which is led by Will and touches on you know, different ways to address and improve and address mental health, both in and out of gaming. So check that one out. The videos for both of those will be up on YouTube soonish. It takes a little longer to edit those, but the audio will be up on Patreon for that second one, and the first one is up already. So if you are a backer on the Patreon, you can listen to that.
Very nice. I like it. Yeah, these are big presentations that we all put together with some special guests, so I think you'll get a lot out of it, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, for sure.
So Anthony, that's everything that's going on with us. Let's talk about things we want to talk about. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right. So I got a new one on Kickstarter that's called...
Uh-oh, here we go.
Here we go. He's doing it. It's called Vicious Gardens. And the subtitle is A Brutally Fun Gardening Game. Combine the joy of gardening with the thrill of being a total jerk. So somebody understands the assignment. If you're going to make a game about plants, it's got to be mean. Because they're all mean. Photosynthesis, arboretum. They're all mean. You just get in each other's way, and that's what plants kind of are, right? They just strangle each other.
Oh my god.
It's evolution in action. So it's a nice, laconic, beautiful garden meadow, and all those plants are just fighting for sunshine. So Vicious Gardens is a game by Ross Ruggink, a designer and illustrator. This is their first campaign on Kickstarter. And it is, as you'd imagine from somebody whose background is in illustration, it's a very pretty looking game. It has a very specific aesthetic, which I'm always a fan of. Like, whether I appreciate the art or not, in this case I do, but whether I do or not, I love when there's like a clear design aesthetic to a thing, especially in the age of people throwing stuff in AI bots. Being able to see the human behind the work is really refreshing. So it's a very cool look and feel. It's very, very flat. But also very creative and kind of textured and how everything looks. So definitely, if nothing else, whether you back it or not, head over to the page and just check out the artwork. I really dig it. As for what you're doing in the game, you are trying to get various special abilities by harvesting plants that will then give you victory points. So you're going to have, you know, things like carnivorous plants and gnomes and all these things that are going to be able to generate victory points within your garden. But of course, the game is also about being a jerk to other people. So there are various ways to do that. So you have different types of plants. You have different types of special abilities. It's a very, looks to be a very quick, simple card game. I shouldn't say it is because I haven't played it. But you are basically building up and managing your own little garden plot and then just messing with your opponent's garden plot as much as you can. The key here, and it's not clear to me just based on, you know, the rough overview of the game, is how strategic is that messing with? Because when you tell me a game's all about messing with other people, I always get like Munchkin vibes, and I'm not a fan of that. So how strategic is it? How well integrated into the game is it? A lot of the times when you have games with like these take that elements, it's like, here's a really nice game and 20% of the cards just allow you to be a jerk to the other person. I'm like, cool. Yeah. That's not fun. It needs to be built into the system in such a way that when you do that, you're directly benefiting yourself, not just being a prick. And I think a lot of designers miss that. So if this game does that effectively, right, and allows you to interact with each other back and forth in a true, like, in the same way you would in like a two-player kind of dueling game where you are messing with your opponent, but you're directly helping yourself when you do that. I'm all about it. I like the look of this. I like the feel of it. You know, what these different specialists look like and how you apply them to yourself and your opponents and how you get your victory points. It looks simple, right? They're like, here's how to play. You plant stuff, you use your specialists, and you harvest for victory points. That's it. And it's just about balance and managing that flow back and forth. So I have this bookmarked. Honestly, I haven't backed anything on Kickstarter in like a year. So maybe, I'm trying to remember. Well, that's not true. I just backed the Tramways workbook. But I don't back a lot of new games anymore, but I'm definitely considering this one because it has a really cool look and feel to it. And it's not super expensive. The one downside here, of course, is that it's like 10% off MSRP, and then you got to pay for shipping. So If you think you can get it elsewhere in the future, maybe you can just do that, because the exclusives are just like a fancy box. So anywho, that is Vicious Gardens. It is on Kickstarter for like 3 more weeks when we're recording this, and it is very, very, very backed, like 200,000% or whatever. So it's coming out. So check that one out.
The artwork is amazing. It really is unique. It's kind of iconic, modern, iconic, throwback 60s psychedelic.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
But it's like it's very modern psychedelic. It's very clean and neat and purposeful. So like you said, just for the artwork alone, this might be great to back, because I just think seeing this at the table, I think the artwork is unlike anything I've seen in a board game in quite some time. So I'm very impressed by this. As you mentioned, I don't like the I'm a jerk kind of cards that you throw at people. I know that's a lot of games. So, I don't know. Again, this is one of those situations where if you're playing a Euro-like type of game and you are playing throwing things at people, especially if it's more than two players, now you got into like, who am I going to hit?
Right.
And you can play with teams, which is great. But once it becomes three players or more and you have take that cards, I don't know. Kind of shuts down a lot of games.
It's hard to balance it. Yeah. So I got to see how that works.
Yeah. And again, I know that one of your biggest gripes of all is not being able to even take a turn.
Right.
So how bad is the attacks of the game that you're going to shut you down? But I love everything about this. I wish I got a chance to preview it, because I think it would be something that, again, looks great.
Yep.
So just by that alone, I think it's definitely worth checking out. I have something a little more obvious. It's something that's coming out, not terribly surprising. This is Black Forest. This is coming out later this year, probably around Essen time. Develop your small glass-making domain in the woods of the Black Forest.
Oh, let me guess. Uwe Rosenberg.
Uwe Rosenberg for the win!
Hey! I didn't actually know that.
That's great, man.
You say glass-making in a forest, and I'm like...
Yes.
A German forest, by the way.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be... Again, I don't know if they necessarily use this word, but like... almost kind of like the spiritual successor to Glass Road. So This is obviously a spot along the Glass Road. So what we're doing is very similar to Glass Road, but instead of dealing with all of the different cards here, this is actually going to be a worker placement game. So What we're looking at is two wheels, and you probably know these wheels from like Glass Road and Ora Labora. So they kind of track the resources that you get, but also allows you to create other resources. And then there are your own player boards, very Uwe Rosenberg, where you're building up your own little farm / village / I don't know, glass trading company. So you're choosing buildings, you're planting, you're placing landscapes, and then you are gaining resources in order to produce glass. And then obviously that allows you to add additional boards to expand your domain. And again, it's got a main board where actions are able to take place. Again, there's very little information out there about this, unless you speak German, which at this point I don't. And it's a little iffy even when I did the translate here. But basically, worker placement, spots on the board to take resources and to take actions. And then there's additional action spots that you can place into your own place, your own board, to actually, you know, activate one-time effects or ongoing effects. So it allows you to build a bit of the worker placement in the game. So, and those buildings that you're building provide bonus points throughout the game based upon accomplishments and yada, yada, yada. So, buildings, landscapes, glass production, two resource wheels in your tableau, which is always fun. I definitely like those in comparison to like just clumbing just a pile full of resources. So if you've liked Glass Road, but you are more traditionalist as far as the worker placement concerned, it's got a little Agricola looking thing because obviously for some reason you still have to feed your people, which seems kind of like last year. Let them get Uber Eats. Like, it should be fine. But yeah, it's coming out this year. It looks fantastic. The artwork, the graphic design is great. And, you know, I'm interested in throwing down some meeples and, you know, collecting some resources on a board, man.
Yeah.
All right. So those are the games that we want to hit the table. Let's talk about the games that we did hit the table. We'll let you know if those games are a buy and then you should run out and pick those games up. Those games are a play and you should sit down and enjoy the heck out of them. If those games are dodge and you should avoid them, or in fact, those games are the Dread Burn, dear God, please no, 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 not the Dread Burn. We don't want to play those games. So Anthony, I have a really interesting game for you this week. We talked about this for quite some time. This is a small production company. This is from Dragon Dawn Productions, and the game is called Tolerance. Do you know anything about Tolerance, Anthony?
As a concept, yes. This particular game, new.
Well, Tolerance, this is a game about tolerance that is focusing on the 16th and early 17th century in Reformation England. You are dealing with the challenges and the conflicts that historically happened between the Catholics and the Protestants. Now, you're doing all of this by utilizing, I know one of your favorite mechanics, trick-taking. And by utilizing trick-taking to pick these different characters into your hand, you're able to use set collection and, again, asymmetrical powers. If you play that version, you can also play the everyone scores the same kind of way, which is kind of boring. But nonetheless, it's a 3-round game. And you're dealing with Queen Mary, who is all down with the Catholics and trying to get everyone to become Catholic again. Queen Elizabeth I, who's just chill. And she's very much like trying to bring forward some, you know, Reformation and some general tolerance, right? You can have Catholics and you can have Protestants. And then King James I, who's just like, tolerance, the Protestant church is established, hardcore, not just what Queen Elizabeth was doing starting off. And it is this historical epic that you're going through, and you're utilizing the different people of that time in order to tell that story of tolerance dealing with the religious situation and the incoming Enlightenment. So you got your Catholics, you got your Protestants, and throughout the game, they utilizing trick-taking mechanics, you are playing cards to try to win tricks. I think most of us knows about trick-taking games, but you're playing a card to win a trick. The different cards have a number of different icons on them. So you have your typical rank and your typical affiliation, because those things are important. And obviously suits, right? Because again, trick-taking. As the game goes on, when you claim a trick, when you win a trick, that's not the end of that turn. Because at that point, you score the cards that you won in that trick. And those cards have a lot of different effects. Some effects will actually kill other cards, condemn other cards, convert other cards to either Protestants or Catholicism, collect taxes, collect piety, or again, guild members. So that is what I really enjoyed about the game, is it's just not about trick-taking. It's telling the story through trick-taking, because you have a lot of different people from that time and age and how the Catholics and Protestants dealt with each other. Some of that's obviously negative, of course. Some of it's positive as they move towards tolerance. But basically, as the game goes on, you are scoring those tricks, utilizing those special abilities. Again, some of them are positive for you. Some of them are negative for you. And again, that all comes down to, are you playing the generic character that everyone plays together? Or are you going hardcore and you're playing some asymmetrical players out there? We played both ways. I don't recommend the generic way, because you really do want to open up different scoring possibilities. Because you know when you play trick-taking games, you might just have bad cards in your hand and you're just not going to win. But if you utilize one of these special people from that history, then you score differently than everybody else. Now, you could show that so everyone knows how you're scoring, or you could hide your special character. And that's the best way for me personally, because I could throw away some tricks and not worry about them because it's not going to score for me, but maybe it scores for you and vice versa, right? So I highly recommend playing with the asymmetric. I know it's a little more challenging because everyone has a different scoring method, but Bertram the Balance, which is the generic way, is fine, but it does not really allow you to kind of steep yourself in that historical period where the aristocracy had different goals. Some of them were just all about tolerance and allowing that people have religious freedom. Some of them were hardcore Catholics, no matter what. Some were hardcore Protestants, no matter what. So it really allows you to kind of play out that history. It's a really interesting idea. I didn't think they would be able to pull it off in a trick-taking game, but it certainly does work. You certainly do get a sense of these characters, whether they're nobles, they're peasants, if they're part of the clergy, they had a role in that history. And depending on those three different ages with those three different monarchs, different scoring options kind of become available. At the end of the game, you score, again, different points based upon your particular character. And also end game points, because penance, when you score enough each particular round, you're going to get penance, multiplication that you can make throughout the game. I didn't care about winning. I thought it was a lot of fun to play out the character. But again, I think the asymmetric nature of the characters and the hidden nature of the characters really did pop it off, because it also kind of played into that time of intrigue where you don't know in particular who someone is, you know, what they're fostering, right? Are they a devout Protestant, or are they a nobleman? Are they trying to support, you know, just general talent to religious freedom? You don't know that, but as the game goes on and you see as the cards that they're trying to collect, you get a sense of that. And maybe it allows you to play differently to keep them from those different scoring options. So Tolerance, it's been out for a little bit. We'll have a link in the bottom. This was a review copy. Anthony and I use a lot of games in our education practice, teaching people. So this might be something we could play probably with graduate students, because I think the different symbology and some of the complexity of the trick taking is a little bit above and beyond like the undergrads. But certainly if you're teaching a lesson around that time period and you want your students to get actively involved in what that meant, especially with the different monarchs, this is a good sense. So check out Tolerance.
That's great. Yeah, when I saw this, I was like, hey, that's a different theme for a game. anything touching on religion at all is going to be a tricky subject. So you got to do a good job of it. Unless you're going with the pure mythological end of it. So it's good to see that someone did it and did it well. And trick taking is interesting, but sure, why not?
Yeah. And again, I think this depiction of history versus others, again, this is certainly something that you can look at. Does this match, you know, your particular value set, or, you know, what was historically presented, or an alternate take or view of that? But I think the general concept of the game, as far as I'm playing a character from that period and I'm dealing with the changing monarchy and I'm trying to benefit whatever particular religious faction by playing out certain characters, I think that's very interesting. It's not going to be for everyone. You really have to be steeped in that kind of history to really kind of like sink your teeth into this. But, you know, it's a different take. Like you said, trick-taking game in this kind of context, usually you would see like a big kind of Euro game. It's a different take, but it works. So check it out and give it a play. All right, everyone. So that's everything for this week. Let's get on to our feature review. Our feature review this week, of course, the latest and greatest. And this latest and greatest is coming convention schedule is Origins Game Fair Preview. Anthony, they're going to have games there.
Yeah. So, I mean, we do previews in front of Gen Con and Essen, and it's like, here's all the new stuff coming out. It's amazing. Origins is always more of a, hey, it's the middle of the year.
Yes.
Here are the games that came out recently or are coming out soon.
Or may possibly show, but maybe not also.
Right. And so it's kind of like an in-between-ish preview. Mm-hmm. It's also not complete yet, right? So like Origins is a month from now, and more games might get added to this list.
Ooh.
Probably not too many, because Origins is not like the big, like, let's show off all of our stuff show, but it's also not super, super full. So this isn't meant to be comprehensive. If, you know, there are channels that do that stuff, like super comprehensive previews of every game coming out. It's more so meant to be like, here's all the cool stuff that we have noticed that is either released recently, that's coming soon, that you can definitely go check out at Origins in one way or another. Which is kind of the fun of that convention, is that it's actually fairly easy to do that. It's mm-hmm. not so crowded. It's not, everything's not selling out in 12 seconds. It's not just like a buy convention.
Mm-hmm.
It's one where you're meant to go play stuff. And every time I'm there, the games on my list, I generally play most of them. So
nice.
It's fun for that. So yeah, if anything catches your eye, definitely write it down, because it's worth tracking down when you're there. All right. So the way we do these previews, if you're just joining us, is we go to the Board Game Geek preview tool. It's on the homepage, the mm-hmm. Origins Game Fair preview. And I sort by thumbs. So the very scientific method of people voting for the games that they think are most interesting, keeping in mind that some of these companies directly solicit people to do that.
Uh-huh.
And other companies don't. So some companies are overrepresented at the tops of these lists. But that's fine. It doesn't matter. We'll skip stuff if we don't think it's interesting. So we have that prerogative. So at the very top of the list is a game that I am actually interested in seeing. Maybe not like run down the aisles to find it, but I just want to see how they do it.
Uh-huh.
And that's Endeavor Deep Sea.
Yes.
So we saw a very brief preview of this a couple of years ago, I think at this point, at PAX. And it is the Endeavor that we know and love, or just know. Depends on your feelings on that game. From Burnt Island Games and Grand Gamers Guild. But they have taken those mechanics and they've repositioned them into like a deep sea diving, like ocean type of exploration game. So it's more about the scientific exploration of the ocean rather than the mercantile exploration and exploitation of the New World that takes place in the original Endeavor. I'm interested to see how much of those mechanics carry over, what they do with the element that was the slavery mechanic, which, whether you like it or not, was still like an important part of the mechanics of that game.
Yes.
Which is why a lot of us don't like it. It's not fun to play with. So how do they do this? I don't know. Be cool to see.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're doing it. I guess that's the best step on this. That they,
right.
Because Endeavor mechanically is a great game. And it was weird that they had that slave mechanic that you almost, I don't want to say you had to participate in, but if you didn't, it really right. made it really led for a difficult game. I like the artwork. I like the design here. It's very smartphone ink looking. So, looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, definitely. So the next one up here is we're getting into Celtic mythology.
Yay!
Tir na n'Og.
Love it.
And this is for another one from Grand Gamers Guild, so you know who sent that email out. and so this is taking place in the realm of the Otherworld. This is where Ooh. The fairies come from, and where heroes go on their quests in the Celtic myths and fables. So it has a very cool artwork and aesthetic to it. Like, just looking through the various pieces of artwork, I'm like, I am loving this. It's Celtic. It's got that like kind of feel to it, but it's not over the top with it either. It's kind of got like a the artist's personality is still coming through in the artwork, despite it like leaning into like the Celtic knots within like the titles, and the color scheme is very green and blue. Gameplay wise, it's a drafting worker placement type of game. So you have like a lot of cards available to draft, and you're trying to build, do what you're trying to do with a large number of different types of cards within the space. And obviously you're trying to move these meeples through the space as well. I don't know. It looks cool. I would definitely track this down to at least play it if I was at Origins this year.
Yeah, I love the look of it. The production looks top notch. This would definitely be on the My Must Play list.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we have the new one from CGE Games. This is not going to be for sale at, and I should say the other two, Endeavor and Tir na n'og, they don't say they'll be for sale at Origins, although Tir na n'og says release date is June, so it might be. SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is the new one from CGE, and it's coming out in the fall. They already announced this. They've already told us all about it. It's coming out in the fall. This is their big box release from Thomas Hulick, who is a new-ish designer. Previously, has just worked on Galileo Galilei, which I believe is, if not self-published, very small published. And so this game is about leading the actual scientific institution that is trying to find extraterrestrial life. So it's not sci-fi. It's a science. And you're working through using tools like space station and the Large Hadron Collider and the rovers and all these different things to go out and actually search for extraterrestrial life. Very cool looking theme. CGE, it's not automatic that their games are going to be good, but they're generally pretty solid. They do a lot of development work to make their games as good as possible. And I really love the look of like this central board of the solar system. All these different wedges and things, and you're putting all the discs out, the CGE discs that we all know and love. I'm very excited for this one. I'm pretty sure it's an Essen release, if maybe Gen Con, but I would definitely want to try this out at Origin.
It's got a giant sun in the middle, man.
I know, it's like a little ball.
It's very cool. Yeah, I love the theme. It's, as you said, it's not sci-fi, but somewhat. It's not fantasyful, right? This is an actual real thing that we do as Earthlings to reach out to the universe, and it'll be interesting to see with this kind of very unique board how they're able to kind of pull that off. So I think it's a steep ask, but you know, there's demos. There'll be demos there. So certainly check it out.
Yeah. All right. So a few more things here from Grand Gamers Guild. So we're not going to really dive into these, but there are some new things for Endangered, which is a game I quite like playing. Red Wolf scenario and the Galapagos Penguins. Awesome. These new modules that come for Endangered are always fun. They change the game a little bit. They give you different victory conditions. Kids Table BG has Cafe Baris.
I love it.
I know you found very funny.
I found very funny. I guess I'm easily amused, but capybaras, capybaras running a cafe.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of capybaras without going into the song in my head. So it seems like it's a cute, you know, it's a cute little game. So and capybaras are cute little animals. So
yeah.
It might be a thing. Seems like family fair.
Yeah, it's from Roberta Taylor, who also designed Creature Comforts and Maple Valley, which are very much in that ballpark.
Yeah, same artwork. Looks great.
Yep. All right. Burnt Island Games also has Mycelia. This is one of the five mushroom games coming out. So you can demo that if you're looking for this particular mushroom game. What's the mushroom game that actually came out so far?
There's a couple that came out, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah. This is not a new thing, but this is one of the more abstract versions of this.
Right.
So it's hard to say. Like, there's a lot of great artwork here. Again, they're trying to deal with, again, a very complex subject. I think we talked about this. I think we did a preview of this, an acquisition disorder.
Right. Yeah.
Back
probably.
Yeah.
Lots of mushroom.
Because it was very much about like, for lack of a better term, please forgive me, like running your mushrooms, then turning your mushrooms down and, you know, sending spores out on the board. So the artwork is fantastic. I mean, if you like mushrooms, it's going to be interesting at some point. And I don't want to predict things, but I think we're going to have to do a top 10 mushroom games in the future.
We're getting there. We're always like, what's the next zombies? Oh, it's cats right now. I'm like, actually, it might be mushrooms.
It's mushrooms. It's certainly mushrooms. And again, it's a brilliant thing. And scientists have discovered, we were talking about how plants fight each other, but now we know about trees and the mycelial network and how it all works together. And it's brilliant. It's amazing. Nature's amazing.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no kidding.
And like understatement. The biggest living creature on the planet is this gigantic network underneath the earth that we don't even know exists. It's there and it's communicating. It's communicating, folks. Who knew? It's doing a thing.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Love it. I love being a gamer. We learn things. We're learning things, man.
Some stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it happens once in a while. It's not
some of it sticks.
It's not all slack and hash, man.
No. All right. Here's a game you probably won't learn too much from: Witchcraft.
Well, you know, it could happen.
It could happen. So this is a game in which a coven of witches needs to prove their innocence and defend a village from the supernatural. It's a one-player only game. It's based on Resist. It's not out, but if you backed it on GameFound, you have it.
Yes.
I have it. It came in a couple, probably 3 months ago at this point. It's good. It's good. I haven't played it enough to review it, but I've enjoyed what little I've played of it so far.
Yeah, I was really excited about this because Resist is such a good game that it'd be interesting to see the different take on it.
Right. Yeah. No, it's just a very nice production
mm-hmm.
for a solo only game, which there aren't that many of, but they're increasingly coming out. Maki Master is the re-release of Wasabi. They had to change the name because somebody else had Wasabi trademarked. but it's apparently just the same game, like a new production. I did back this because I loved Wasabi, and then I could never find a copy of it.
Sure.
I played it like in the early days of Myriad, I played Wasabi. Somebody had a copy. I played it like 2 or 3 times. I'm like, this is great. I love this. And then I've never been able to find a copy. So it popped up on Kickstarter. I'm like, done, get money. I'll play this.
There you go. Remember when you were saying that you didn't back games on Kickstarter?
Yeah, but that was almost a year ago.
All right.
It's all good.
I guess.
Yeah. It's way, way, way less than it used to be. Stone Spine Architects is the new one from Thunderworks. And it released-ish recently, so they will have it at Origins. So this is in the world of role player,
mm-hmm.
But it is not role player. It is a closed drafting contract completion game in which you are building you're building the labyrinth.
Yeah,
you're playing minotaurs. You're building a labyrinth.
It's a cool idea. It's very abstract. We've seen generally this kind of idea before, as far as like boss monster and stuff like that, but this is a cool take on it.
Yeah. All right. So there's some stuff here in the preview that's stuff that's been out for a while. It's like Kutna Horror, the City of Silver is up here. This came out at Gen Con last year, or mm-hmm. PAX. Through the Desert, though, the new version of Reiner Knizia's classic Through the Desert. So All Play ran a Kickstarter for this a few months ago. It will be available for sale, apparently. It has not quite shipped everywhere yet elsewise. It's a great game. It's a Reiner Knizia classic. It's abstract, but it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of Go a little bit, as you kind of fill up the map with all your little camels. And All Play makes solid productions and fairly inexpensive. It's $39 for a euro. Hard to find that anymore.
Yeah, All Play is doing some big things. They're making some big moves.
Yeah. Nova Roma, a new game from Stan Kordinsky. Who worked on Kuruk, Dawn of Kiev, and Lock Up, a role player, Tale, a few other games, Endless Winter, a big one. So this one is coming from 25th Century Games, and it's about building Constantinople.
Sure.
So you are Roman nobles helping out the emperor here. Looks interesting. It's, again, another one of those ones that's like, out now-ish, maybe some places, but will be at Origins as well.
Great.
Middle Ages is a new one from Marc Andre of Splendor fame, coming from Studio H and Hatchet Games. So in this one, you're building your own little fiefdom with tiles. So it's a tile-laying game. Quick, supposedly family-friendly. It releases in June, so I could see this one being kind of a hot, low cost, easy to get into game to play at the convention. Marc Andre makes pretty accessible games.
Yeah, I like this a lot. It reminds me of, was it Majesty?
Mm.
Where the cards kind of, you know, built up in a row, but here you're using tiles to kind of build it up.
Right.
And the artwork looks great. So this is one of them that I'm really excited about. So I guess actually Majesty for the Realm, this is a re-implementation of that. So
it is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I'm on the I'm on the ball.
There
here.
You go. That's why you want it.
I'm like, I've seen this. I think it reminds me of a game. It looks like a game. It kind of plays like it. Oh yeah, it's a game. It's a game.
Because it is that game.
It is that game. I own that game. Okay. But now now instead of cards, it's tiles. So
it's so much prettier tiles.
Yeah. The cards were good. I mean, the cards were not bad.
Cards were fine, yeah. But like this, I don't know. Aesthetically, this one looks.
Oh, I agree.
More interesting.
I like the aesthetics a lot. Big fan.
Yeah, and you're building like little towers on those lanes. Yeah. It's not just a card on the lane. Which is
yeah, like
so it's a little more complex.
100%.
All right, that's a cool one. I think that'll be hot at the
yeah. Convention. Agreed.
All right. Next up, we have The Fog: Escape from Paradise.
Okay.
What do you think that's about?
Is it fog? Is it fog related?
I don't know, man. It's a competitive game that takes about an hour and a half.
Uh-huh.
And you are villagers on an island trying to reach your boats in a panic as you escape a life-threatening fog. Yeah, so it's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's Stephen King's Dome or Mist or whatever that one was.
Well, there
and you're trying to put people on boats.
I mean, there actually is the Fog movies. So
oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. So I was like, the fog, but it seems like it's kind of put together with Survivor. At least it looks like Survivor.
Yeah. Aesthetically, for sure.
Yeah. But there was a movie called The Fog back in the 80s, and it was very creepy. It was like giant cloud scary. And it turned out, spoilers, Ghost Pirates. So,
ooh. Yeah.
Ghost Pirates.
I wonder if there's Ghost Pirates in this.
I don't know. But they redid, I think it came, they did a new version of it, you know, back in the day. But this is interesting. Or maybe this is like, what's that movie with the island that just kind of fell off on the edge?
The movie with the island.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The TV show about the island.
Oh, Lost.
Lost. Yeah. Because there's the fog monster, right? Wasn't there like that?
Yeah. The fog monster.
Yeah, I watched like a couple episodes and I was like, nah, I can't. But again, the fog monster sticks with you. So. Go fog monster. Can you know? Yay. Can I be a fog monster? I don't know. Is it one versus many? I guess not.
It might be. Hey, maybe there's a mode.
Ooh.
In which, one person plays the fog.
I want to play the fog. I don't play these stupid survivors. Be the fog, man.
I would love it. That would be cool.
I know. So cool.
All right. Next up. Xylitar.
You're making that up.
Yeah. No, it's. You've seen those things, right? It's like a xylophone guitar thing, synthesizer.
Okay, so
from the 80s.
I tell people this all the time. I'm like, whatever you can think of, there's been a game made about it. And they go, you're crazy. And I'm like, no. But I guess now we're there.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And is this,
it's a trick.
Is this a polar bear playing the xylitar?
Yeah, well, obviously.
Oh, well.
Like, what else would it be?
Jeez. Who lost that bet? Come on.
I don't know. So this is a trick-taking game. So it's re-implementing a self-published game called Magic Trick by Christopher Ray. Bezier Games is bringing it out, though.
Uh-huh.
And they don't publish very much. But when Bezier releases a game, it's either really good, it's going to sell a million copies, or no one will remember what it is in like 3 weeks. So. Maybe this could be the next werewolf game. Who knows?
It's a polar bear. It's a polar bear.
Yeah. It is. It's not going to be the next anything, but it looks like a game.
Well, they want it to be the next, you know, cat in a box kind of situation.
Right. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Cat in the Box is great.
Yes.
All right. Allplay has A Message from the Stars. Ooh. That they say they'll have for sale there. This is another one. This was on their Kickstarter with Through the Desert.
Mm-hmm.
So it is you're trying to decode these different messages from an extraterrestrial civilization.
Wow. We are
solving riddles.
We are so ready for so many things to happen. I'm telling you.
I know. Yeah, we're like willing it into existence. From the Moon, from La Boite de Joux, which is another space game in which you're trying to save everybody. So players represent different factions. You're completing missions going from the moon off into the galaxy to try to save humanity.
Yes.
Because Earth is about to go bye-bye.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
I live there.
Sci-fi games. Yeah, it's bad. Bad, man.
I really love this production. It's good.
Yeah, it looks very nice. It's expensive, though.
It's got really cool, like, little rovers and stuff. But again, like, yeah, that costs money. So
it is $90. It was on Kickstarter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't...
But it is releasing at Origins, so you can pick it up there.
Okay.
If you didn't back it.
Sure.
Not pay the shipping.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Full MSRP, but sure.
Here's an interesting one that I still can't fathom why this exists. Little Alchemist.
Oh, dear God. Why would you do that to the children?
So one of the crunchiest, weirdest, and digitally based games that I've played from Modest Kotri, Alchemists, which I maintain is still a good game, but it's just borderline impossible to teach and get played. So I owned it forever. I eventually got rid of it because I'm like, this is never hitting the table again. It's just too difficult. They made a version of it for children, ages 7 and up. And it is a family-friendly deduction game. I'd see no mention of apps. So I think it's just going to be like taking the basic components of Alchemist, which is like combining various ingredients and trying to deduce these different like recipes and stuff. It also has like a campaign element to it. It says like 7 chapters, which you will unlock as you play.
Oh, man.
Which is becoming a more common thing I'm seeing in like kids games.
Sure.
Because it keeps them engaged and they play it more, which it does work. My kids dig that. I don't know. We'll see. It would have to be way, way simpler than the original.
The original was a chore.
Yeah.
I appreciate the original, but it was a chore, man. I remember playing that game and just being like, no, just like it's the kind of game you want to love. I'm glad that they did this. Maybe they'll reprint Alchemist in a more reasonable, easier to kind of play version.
I don't know how you could
without the app. Without the app, maybe
you can play that without the app, but it's an even bigger nightmare.
That's no.
You have to like keep these little charts and these cards. You have to keep track of it.
No, I'm fine. I'm good.
No bueno.
I'm good.
Yeah. All right. So moving down the list here, we have Evil Corp, which you and I played at PAX.
We did.
This was like you just kept doing these like rounds where you like face off against each other. It's like 1v1, and you're trying to like basically produce points through these like one-on-one battles as you build up a bag of what are they, demons?
Yeah, it's you're trying to control the lane, so it's kind of tableau building a bit. So it's fine. It's an interesting game. It's some deck building, some you know, stuff in a bag and stuff like that. It's weird because again, like Evil Corp. Like I get it. I don't think the theme comes through completely. Like
right.
They could have went with a different theme, and I think it would have even pirates, which I'm not a big fan of pirates, but it just seems like it would play more that way. But yeah, it's fine. I think we give it a play.
I might have dodged it. I don't remember, but it's just very repetitive. I think was the problem I had with it.
Sure.
Like it's a cool idea, and then every round you're doing the exact same thing. I'm like, cool.
Okay,
this is fine. It's fine. All right, Super Boss Monster, they're gonna have demo there for Otherwise Games. So they are making a new version of Boss Monster, and it's similar idea, right? You have like a side-scrolling dungeon that you're building by drafting rim cards, but now you have a town board and some new mechanics and other locations outside of your dungeon. So it's like a temple and a stadium and a library and a tavern and all sorts of cool stuff. So adding the town element to the game definitely will change it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The artwork and general display of everything looks roughly the same because it was already 16-bit.
Yeah. And
so they're kind of just, I mean, it's super. We're building on like, you know, like, oh, one's Nintendo. This is not Super Nintendo or whatever. But the aesthetic looks basically the same.
I haven't previewed this or played this in any kind of way, shape or form, but it certainly needed some revisions. I think the original one was fine, but I think it was a little clumsy in some spots.
Right.
And I think this was obviously one of their earliest games that they came out with.
Their first game. Yeah.
We backed it. We both backed it. And the app, I think, yep. too.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The 10th anniversary edition just released, actually. I picked up a copy of it because my old copy got lost.
Nice.
Somewhere. All right. Queen Games has a new one. Dabawala. So this is the Dabawala who deliver lunch boxes in Mumbai.
Cool.
So you are running around the city delivering. It's pick up and deliver, basically, mechanically speaking. And it, of course, Queen Games, it comes with some modules and expansions to complicate things. That's basically the same look and feel of any Queen game you might have played, like aesthetically speaking. But little standees of guys on their bicycles delivering food around the city.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like you mentioned, like, just even seeing the picture or just even a bit of it without the Queen Games stuff on it, I knew it was a Queen Games, right? Like, it's got that gold orange with the blue and that kind of same similar art style. And they're generally okay. But after the Feld games, I really would like them to go back to the drawing board and do what Board and Dice did and just make each game fundamentally different, like a different take. Instead of like a line of gold, beige, light green, light blue, just do something different. Like go, you know, make each game stand out. Cause I think a lot of the games are good, but they blur together.
Yeah. It's just that house style.
Yeah.
I think in board games, a house style doesn't really work. Cause again, people are like, it's the same game. Like, no, it's new.
100%, because I got to tell you how many times I have brought Queen. I own a lot of Queen games, and I brought them to the table, and people are like, "Oh, I played this." I'm like, "You didn't. It's new." And they're like, "But is it really?" And I'm like, "All right." Just like, yeah, Mike got me there.
Yeah. All right. Another game that is up on the preview list that'll be for sale there is called Sirens. This is a two-player game in which you play sirens that are trying to craft the best song through micro drafting. You're drafting like a little hand of cards, and you're trying to craft the best song to attract sailors to your cliff. So you have like the sirens on either side of the ship as it flows through.
Nice.
Love the theme, love the aesthetic. If I could find a copy of this somewhere, I would probably just pick it up. This is very much in my wheelhouse in terms of theme.
Nice.
All right, so just a couple more here because we get down to this point where everything has like 15, 20 thumbs and they all kind of fall in the same boat. And it's not that these games aren't great or interesting. It's just that maybe we haven't had time to know what they are.
Or they haven't had a lot of information about them generally.
Right. Yeah. So like these lists often have 200 games on them. We don't know all of them inside and out. But one game that recently released that people were talking about is Blueprints of Mad King Ludwig. We saw it at PAX. We could have tried it. We did not. But it will be available at Origins in full. This is a drawing game, so I was interested to see where you landed on this, Chris, because it's Mad King, but you're drawing on a piece of paper.
Nah. Who knows? I love Mad King, but I kind of bounced from it after Between Two Castles. That broke me mentally. I can't go back to it.
Yeah, Between Two Castles. Such a wasted opportunity because it's a good game.
It's a good game. Weird
decisions that make it bad.
It's a good game. Nobody wants to score that. When we finish the game, now everyone looks at each other like, I'm not scoring that. I'm just like,
yeah.
It's fun. Yeah, it's great, but they needed to have some like you know, you scan your phone over it and it scores it. Because again, it'll probably be a very good online game if they ever put it online as an app.
Yeah. All right. There's a new expansion for World Wonders, the Mundu expansion. I am not a huge fan of this game, but it has been very popular. So a lot of people do care. It has 9 new monuments in the game, as well as a new mode that adds new cards for different ways to score things. I think this is a game that could benefit from some complications, so that's not a bad thing. Be interested to see how that plays out. Anunnaki, Dawn of the Gods. Mm-hmm. This was the Simona Luciani and Danilo Sabia game that ran on Kickstarter, and like all of Cranio's Kickstarters, it was a bit messy, but it came out, it exists. Capstone's distributing it now, so you can buy a copy for a low, low price of $100.
And when the initial came out, it was super crazy expensive. And then they were like, we need to revise this and shrink it. And they did. And I've seen it out there in the world and I want to play it. But it was a very hard not backing situation for me.
Well, guess who has it? This guy.
Oh, that guy. I know that guy.
Yeah, I did back it. I haven't played it yet, actually. Ooh. So I can't talk about it, but damn, I do have it.
Yeah, we'll have to play that.
Yeah. Chicago 68 looks interesting. As a person who loves games about real things that we can have conversations about.
Yeah.
I guess that's both of us. It's our podcast.
Yeah.
So this is about the Chicago convention riots of 1968, which is particularly prescient right now with all of the protests happening on college campuses around the country and some significant concern that this may again happen at the conventions over the summer this year.
Yeah, so you could play the establishment or the demonstrators. Whatever you do in life, my friends, play the demonstrators. Students have always been right historically. Look back. They were right. They were right. They were right. They are still right. They're right today. They'll be right tomorrow. And establishment needs to chill because, you know, be on the right side of history, people. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, those students grow up and become the establishment, though. That's the problem.
Well, I have hope for the younger generations. I have a lot of respect for them because they're putting themselves out there, and I greatly appreciate it. So it's inspiring.
And they have a lot of stuff to deal with that's left for them.
Yeah, it's a different our world more or less, or our lives more or less. We're not as challenging as literally everything that's on fire right now.
Right.
So.
Oh man! All right. Two more here. Just real quick, we have Foundations of Metropolis, mm-hmm. which is coming out in Gen Con, but they'll be previewing it at Origins. This is Emerson Matsuchi's Foundations of Rome, but reworked into like a modern city, presumably with less pieces and a little smaller footprint, but I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ito, which is a very popular trick-taking game in Japan, is being released here in the U.S. And it's what's the Arcane Wonders picked up the license for this. So it's been out for a while. It's not a new game, but it'll be an opportunity to pick it up as a cooperative deduction trick-taking type of game. They don't even list trick-taking as a mechanic. It's really just like everybody's got a secret card and you got to try to figure that out, the secret card based on the actions that people take. So there you have it, folks. About 30 or so-ish of the 150 games that are on the Origins preview list. There's a lot more great stuff on there. Encourage you to check it out if you're going to be there. Even if you're not going to be there, it's a good idea. It's a good way to get a sense of what games are going to be hot over the summer leading up to Gen Con when we get like 600 other new games and all this stuff falls away. We forget about it completely.
Yeah, it's a great time. Great convention. A lot of great people there. And I think with Origins more than any other convention, you do want to study the list. You do want to go through the games because they tend not to have all the newest releases, as Anthony mentioned, but they do have some rare gems amongst them. So do your homework and you'll have a great time either demoing those games or actually picking those games up. All right, everyone. So until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.